he was rather reserved and difficult to know, not like my husband, but however, they got along pretty well. But it was another matter for my rest of my family. My brother and sister were very angry that I was living at Brookwood with my husband, awaiting my child, and thought that I was going to get more than my share of the family money. Well, they did their best to poison the minds of my father and mother against my husband, saying that he was running after other women, that he'd married me for money, when already he was a wealthy man. He wasn't a poor man in any way, and he'd given up a lot to come and see what Canada was like. Well, there were many things that brought this about, but first of all, my father listened to my mother, and my mother was influenced by my brother, who said all kinds of things, and also my sister, who kept writing and saying that it was terrible the way I was being treated. Oh, she knew nothing of how my husband treated me or not, or how I treated him, as a matter of fact. But she interfered in every way she could. The result was that I left the house, and my child was born in a small hospital, and we took an apartment on Wellesley Street temporarily. And when my child was born, my daughter Amina, she was a healthy child, but in being born there were a lot of complications because the doctor was drunk and didn't want to come from a New Year's Eve party, which was the date at which she was arriving, New Year. So he tried to ask the matron of the hospital to give me something to slow the labor pains. But my husband heard this and insisted that she not give me anything. So anyway, the doctor arrived, still drunk, and my daughter was born while I was under anesthesia, and she was taken with forceps. And I was quite ill afterwards because I caught flu from somebody in the hospital. My mother came to see me and wanted to see the baby, and I said, oh, very well, but I didn't want my father to come because he'd caused me so much trouble. So I went home to the little apartment, and we were quite happy there. Through a friend, Mrs. George Lindsay, I got a nurse, Mrs. Campbell, and who was able to help me because I had never cooked nor done these things, although I knew the theory of cooking, but I hadn't done it actually. And my father and mother bothered me in many ways, tried to say that my husband was keeping me a prisoner and all kinds of piffle, and I had to go to the police and tell them that I wasn't. And we caught a man that was following me, and the police grilled him, and he said he belonged to a detective agency. And he'd been paid by my father, Pinkerton's, to watch and see if I was being ill-treated. So the police told him to go chase himself, and I thanked the police for believing me and taking me with them in the police car. Then I went to a lawyer, Mr. Mills, Stanley Mills, who was recommended to me. He was with one of the biggest firms in Toronto. And I asked him to defend me in any case my sister and brother, my father, brought against me. So my father called me and told me that I wouldn't get a cent if I didn't give in and accept whatever terms they offered. So I was very angry, and I said no, and I dropped the receiver with such a bang that I broke it. And my milk stopped. I had no milk to nourish the baby. So I had to go to a doctor to get artificial milk and have it. A large amount made because I intended to go back to Egypt. We couldn't stay forever. My husband had to get his income, and it cost him a great deal, as it was. So my husband was very much afraid because I had taken the best lawyer in Toronto, Mr. Saunders, to represent me in the court, who was at that time got $100 a day, which was a great deal. So we then went. Prepared to go back to Egypt, and we went on a Faber Line ship, a cruise ship, which stopped at different places, and I took Mrs. Campbell with me, who was quite happy to come, as she said she had looked after her grandchildren for nothing and would like to earn something as a nurse. She was a very good person. So we had a leisurely trip back to Egypt from New York, where my friends met me my old friends from school, Dorothy Green, who wasn't married then, and her family brought flowers and a whole basket of fruit and different things to the boat and were very kind. So off we sailed for Egypt, and on the way we had a pleasant time because it was a cruise ship and there were many congenial people on board, and my daughter was well and Mrs. Campbell looked after her well, and I could go ashore and leave her with Mrs. Campbell, which was nice because we could see a bit of Lisbon and a bit of the Azores and wherever the boat stopped. Then we arrived in Egypt, and of course then my sister in the meantime had caused trouble for me in Egypt. She had said all kinds of things about me and that I was marrying, I don't know, a fella or something. Well, my husband was pure Circassian and Turkish, and he was as white as anybody. He was Aryan, and I knew that, and so did my sister, so she had no reason to speak in this way about me, but she did. So as a result, my sister-in-laws were furious with me and with my sister, and they didn't want to see me. So I didn't see anybody hardly when we arrived in Alexandria. My husband took an apartment furnished, and he went up to Cairo and then tried to arrange to live in the big family palace. He had a right as much as his sisters, and so he tried to arrange an apartment for us and Mrs. Campbell, which he did. And of course his sisters weren't a bit pleased, and they carried on like anything, and having been so annoyed by my own sister's remarks. So in the end, after going back to Cairo and living in Zamalek, we decided to take an apartment ourselves, and that his sisters would pay my husband so much a month as his share of his house, the palace. So they did, and we took an apartment in Garden City. And there, first in Zamalek, we took an apartment in Zamalek first. And we lived there for some time. And then we took an apartment in, we first took the apartment in Garden City. It was downtown, I'm wrong. It was in the Midan Ismaili, a small apartment. And then Mrs. Campbell, in the meantime, got quite ill, and we found that she'd had cancer. So I asked her whether I had made the arrangement with her that if she wasn't happy in Egypt, she could go back to Scotland or to Canada. She had children in both countries. So she wanted to go to Scotland, and my husband arranged for somebody who was going to England to keep an eye on her and put her on the proper train for Scotland. And we sent the x-rays after her, and one of her daughters in Canada wrote me a very rude letter and said we'd made her ill, but the one in Scotland knew that I'd looked after her well and wrote and thanked me for helping her, and the doctors couldn't do anything. She had cancer of the stomach. So after a year she died, but not before writing me and telling me that how happy she had been and with us and hoping for the best for my daughter, Amina. So my sister caused me a great deal of trouble with my sisters-in-laws, but then my second daughter, Naila, was born. I named her after Nelly Sultan, who was married to Abu Bakr Ratib, a friend of my husband's, and she gave me a lovely diamond, mashallah, when Naila was born, and was always very kind to me. When I was in Egypt and when she was there, she traveled a lot. She was a very wealthy woman and could go and leave whenever she felt like it. So we lived, as I said, this time we were in Garden City, and we were quite comfortable there. And then times got worse and worse, and my husband had really... he guaranteed somebody at the bank. And so he was very upset. It was Mustafa Foda, who'd been very kind to him, and he felt that he had to guarantee him. But it was a put-up job. They got my husband alone and put him in front of a thing to say, sign this, And he, as he was staying with them in the country, and I was too at that time, he felt he had to. So when we got back to Cairo, I realized we were in a mess. And so we moved then to Alexandria, and we stayed for several years at Alexandria because it was cheaper living there, and I took a small apartment, and we had a smaller car, and my husband tried to make more money by growing more rice near Alexandria in property he had near Yamanhur. So altogether, it was very hard. But in the meantime, his sisters realized that my sister had just wanted to cause trouble, and I think they really liked my children as much as they could like anybody, being rather selfish and being unmarried and having no thought for anybody but themselves. Although two had been married, but one had never lived with her husband because he had asked, that was Kumria, he had asked right away my mother-in-law to hand over the estate affairs to him, showing that he'd only married her for money, so she'd put him out immediately, and Kumria wouldn't have anything to do with him. And the other one, Zainab, had married a man who had some Fela blood in him, and her mother told her that, and not to marry him, but she insisted. So she married him and was very unhappy. His mother was a real pain and interfered in everything, even wanted him to sleep in the same room with her because she was jealous of his wife. And so she left, but she left, and she was pregnant, and she had a daughter called Amina at home. But other than that, they hadn't much experience of life and were rather selfish people. And my mother-in-law having died in the meantime, they had everything in their hands, and they had their eldest sister, Samira, ran things. Well, Samira ran things for them and interfered in everything she could. Even she had the waqf of the Barudi family, which was an old religious trust, in her hands, which she shouldn't have had because the waqf stated that it should be the eldest male and the most responsible person who ran it. So by accident, I had found out a great deal about the family. I've always been interested in genealogy, and I found that it was a very old waqf indeed, and it had been established by an ancestor of my husband's, one of the Mamluks, as a foundation to look after orphans, to feed them and educate them. And so these orphans were educated, and then they were clothed up to a certain age. And for this waqf, it was the old Barudi palace in town which brought the income for it mainly. And there were a great many shops that hadn't been rented for years, we found, and other things like similar. It had been neglected and had been milked by her wakil, that is, her superintendent, and he'd just run it to suit himself. Because my husband's family was a very old family in Egypt. His grandfather had been the nephew of Alfi Bey and had married his grandmother, who was the last of the Barudis, for her money, I think. But however, money or not, they'd been very happy until he'd been sent to the Sudan as governor of the Blue Nile, which was too much for him, he being pure Circassian with red hair, and used to spend his time in water, which soon gave him a fatal disease from which he died as a young man, leaving my father-in-law and two sisters. So they were not looked upon, especially my father-in-law, with favor by the Khedive's government, because they were... Really, he was the last of the Mamluks. So he was sent to Turkey, and he was brought up in the pages' school there at the court of the Sultan. And he became a soldier and a general, colonel and then general in the Turkish army. And he was with the army when they took Crete later from the Greeks. He headed Egyptian soldiers, whom he always said were good soldiers as long as they were led by proper officers, he meaning Circassian or Turkish trained officers. And he was a very clever man himself. He was a poet. He was in different languages. He spoke different languages. He made the pilgrimage to Mecca. And they had not thought he was an Arab or had a Muslim, and they had made him recite part of the Quran, which of course he was able to do, so they let him go, otherwise they would have killed him, thinking he was an unbeliever in Mecca. And he was a very capable man. And so when he came back to Egypt, he married the daughter of one of the Khedive, I think it was, not Ismail, but before him. But that marriage didn't last because she had a lover, one of the court musicians. And so he threw the lover down the stairs at the palace on Rhoda in the Nile, and he died from that. And she pined away later because she'd never wanted to marry my father-in-law. She had loved this court musician. So then as second wife, he married Princess Adila Yegin, who was, Yegin means son-in-law, so she was descended from the daughter of Muhammad Ali. And she was a very wealthy woman, not as wealthy as my father-in-law, but still well-to-do. And he had two daughters and a son from her, but unfortunately the son was not a well man. He had been dropped by his nurse on the marble floor of the palace, the old palace, and it had affected him. He never could speak clearly. They sent him to Europe and did everything to have him trained, and he could make himself understood. He wasn't backward. He could read and he could draw, and he was quite talented, but he couldn't speak well. So when my father-in-law then was in the army, he got into politics, and he was the Minister of War under Arabi Pasha. He wanted to use Arabi Pasha, I suppose, to become king of Egypt, as he was the rightful descendant of the Mamluks. And I suppose he thought he had every right to be Sultan or king of Egypt. So he joined Arabi in rebelling against the Khedive, because the Khedive would never advance anybody but Circassians in the army. Although my father-in-law was a Circassian, he took the side of the Egyptians and said they should also be advanced and trained. Well, this caused a great trouble, and there was a revolution against the Khedive. And then I learned that there was an old palace in Cairo that belonged to the Barudis, and when Barudi Pasha was exiled, he gave it to Sharif Pasha on condition that Sharif Pasha pay him $1 a year to have it, and that if he didn't pay them the dollar a year, then it would belong to Sharif Pasha. Well, Samira Hanum never bothered to see that the dollar a year was paid, and so Sharif Pasha's family got the palace and land, which was very large in the center of Cairo, because Mahmoud Sami Pasha, my father-in-law, was in exile, or going to be exiled, he knew at the time, and that's why he did it, to try and save some of his property. And as the part of the waqf, where the other palace was partly in that, and there were other things they couldn't touch, being religious, and Galila Hanum had been made trustee, his sister, of the waqf when he knew that he was going into exile. He was trying to save something for any children he had or children he might have in the future. He didn't know his wife, Adila Hanum Yegin, was still young. So anyway, it was all very complicated, but Samira Hanum, my sister-in-law, my husband's half-sister, really profited for many years of the waqf and everything to do with it. And so through my discovery of this and other things, my husband was able to go to court and demand that it be given to him, which it was. Well, that helped us out a bit. As I said before, he was in a bad way because he had to pay money for the man he had guaranteed foolishly, his old friend. And so we had a difficult time for many years, but my father always helped me. after about 6 years of my married life, and he said he was sorry, and my mother was sorry. So I went to see them in Marseille, where my mother met me, and I took the children with me. By that time, we were living in... we were still living in Cairo when I left, and the nurse I had by then, Lottie Puschel, who was an Austrian girl, she was going back to Austria to learn to be an X-ray technician. So that was that, and my father provided a governess for my children and took a house in Monte Carlo for the winter. So I stayed away from my husband about 5 months, and then I had a very pleasant time with my father and mother, and after that they gave me an income, so that was a great help. And Mustafa Foda, when he heard all this, he came to my husband and said, well, I don't have to pay you, your wife has money. Well, that was no reason not to pay my husband, because my husband was his friend and the one that he'd done in the eye. But my husband was very trusting in some ways, especially with, he thought that he owed this man something, because his father had taught him how to be a farmer in Egypt, as he didn't know himself anything about farming. But that's what, anyway, he was grateful, and in being grateful, he caused a lot of trouble for his family and wife. But then, after this, it went a little better, and I used to go to see Galila Hanum, who was still alive. She had a house in Alexandria, and she would give me the Salamlek to live in. And she used to tell me a lot about the family, my husband's family, and how that his grandmother, in the time of Napoleon, she had been a very powerful personality, and she complained to Napoleon when he took Egypt that he was bothering her, and his soldiers were, so he sent a paper and had it pinned on the door of the palace, tacked on, that nothing was to be touched by order of Napoleon. And so that helped them to hang on to what they had then, before all this happened with the Khedive, etc. Because Napoleon fought the Mamluks, and they were all eliminated, except one, and who was supposed to have gotten away, and my husband's ancestor, who did get away. And so that was how they really lived. But naturally, after my husband's father, my father-in-law, when he went in with Arabi and was defeated by the English at Tel el-Kebir, the English took him and wanted to exile him. They wanted to hang him, as a matter of fact. But his wife, the Princess Adela, got an English lawyer through Sir Wilfred Scawn Blunt, helped and defended him and defended Arabi Pasha. So the English said that they were to be exiled to Ceylon, because they backed the Khedive and they didn't want any bother. Egypt was a place where everything English was sold, and where the cotton was sent to England to be processed and then resold as material back to the Indians and the Egyptians, and one the basis of the cotton trade in England, of course, for many years. So my husband then, with his father, went to Ceylon, and he had money, a certain amount, but the main property and money he had to leave, which was taken by the then Khedive. 1882, the Arabi revolt broke out, and my father-in-law was prime minister before, and then minister of war under Arabi Pasha. He joined the revolt because he wanted Egypt to be independent from Turkey, and the Khedive Ismail had wrecked the finances of Egypt so terribly, and now Tawfiq was a fool and completely under the hands or under the rule of the English and the Europeans. So, however, he was defeated. The English bombarded Tel el-Kebir, and the Egyptians were defeated. They had no big guns or anything. It was a very one-sided affair. So he was arrested and going to be hanged, as I said before. But on account of his wife having done all that, his second wife, Princess Adela, he just was exiled to Ceylon. And there, after many years, he decided to marry again. His wife had died, they said, from a broken heart. She loved him very much. And he married the daughter of Yaqub Pasha Sami, who was a Turk, and he had been Minister of War under him when he was Prime Minister at one time. So he had a daughter of 19, my mother-in-law, Amina Hanım, and his wife, her mother, had been a Greek, the daughter of the Patriarch of Athens when the Turks had been there, and he'd taken her as a prisoner, but he had loved her, married her, and she'd been his only wife, which was unusual in those days among the Muslims. So my mother-in-law then was part Greek. And she was well brought up in an English way, and so brought her children up in the same way, and she had governesses for them and nurses, Sinhalese nurses, and English. And so they lived and quite happily. And my husband was he had four sisters, Mushira, Zainab, Fatma, and Kumriya, who were the eldest, and one brother, Kemal. So then when my husband was only a few years old, the grandfather of the present queen, King George, had been there with his brother, the Duke of Clarence, who was then heir apparent to King Edward, later King Edward, and to Victoria. He had been there and had liked Baroudi Pasha very much. And so when he went back to England, he begged Queen Victoria to let Baroudi Pasha go back to Egypt, because by then he was going blind and was an old man and broken, and wanted to return to see his children from his first wife. And so Queen Victoria allowed him to return, and there were great rejoicings when he arrived back in Egypt, and they said that Miss Hartley, whom I met, who was a nurse of English origin, said that the people threw flowers on the water. It was covered with flowers, and the train had to stop every little way going to Cairo for people to cheer and welcome Baroudi Pasha. And she was taken, when she arrived, she said she got all mixed up because people took the horses out of the carriage that was waiting to take them to the Baroudi Palace. And she thought she was lost, but they took her all right. And her charges, who were my husband and his brother Kemal. And she described it all very vividly to me. But it was a bit late. He was going blind and from cataract, and he had an operation, but I don't suppose they were able to help him very much. But he went on writing. He loved writing poetry, so he had a secretary who took down his words and wrote, although he couldn't see. And Amina Hanım, my mother-in-law, was devoted to him and to her family, but she wasn't so pleased when the first family, some of them, came to live with her, especially Samira Hanım. And Samira Hanım was a very, as I said before, was very bossy. And when she was young, she insisted on marrying a man called Zulfikar, who was a judge of Greek descent. And he was quite a decent man, but he drank. He used to drink brandy in the morning. And this didn't please her, so after a couple of months, she returned home pregnant and never went back to him and wouldn't divorce him or wouldn't have anything to do with him. He didn't divorce her. He wanted her to come back. And then her son was born, Samir. And the father and the grandmother on the father's side were devoted to this boy and spoiled him very much. But she never would go back to her husband, and he died then later. It seems he was a clever man and a very good judge. But she remained a thorn in the flesh for my poor mother-in-law, according to everything that I heard. And I can well believe it, having known her personally, and rather liked her in spite of everything. But that's beside the point. She had definitely been a real pest. When anything was wrong in the house, she'd make a terrible scene and act as though the place was hers, although by this time it